Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Good evening and welcome to Tando Radio Show. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is it's a Thursday, and it is June the 21st, 2018. This year has, what, we're at the halfway point of the year. I tell you, man, when you get in your 50s, it just seems, I don't know, maybe other people had this perspective too, but since I become a grandparent in my 50s, time just go by too fast, man. I'm like, man, I'm losing too much time too quickly. You know, so, man, it is the 21st already of June. Okay, so you might have been expecting to hear Dave's voice, but Dave, we don't know what's going on with Brother Dave. We hope that whatever's going on with Brother Dave, it isn't negative, that he's not being negatively impacted, and that's why he wasn't able to call in to start the show. Maybe he'll call in a little later. So I'm going to go ahead and start the show. Now, I know Dave wasn't going to be on Friday. He mentioned that yesterday. And he was going to get with me about whether I was going to do a BTR news or if we was going to get some of the other hosts to take that slot on Friday. I'm going to go ahead and say I'll do an episode of BTR news. I might be able to wrangle up some guests and what have you. There are some definitely some issues dealing with hip-hop and bad behavior. You just had a rapper killed in Florida, and I had just been talking to Brother Kwabena of Clear the Airways Project earlier, you know, this month in an interview about this violence that's being promoted by this industry and through the radio airwaves, and how, you know, we're emulating this violence. We're seeing people emulate this violence. I'm past the point of what came first. Is this life imitating art or art imitating life? I think we're way past that point. It's just happening. Violence is happening to the artists as well as to those, you know, who listen to that music. Not saying that, you know, only people who listen to certain types of rap music get shot. So, no, that's not what I'm saying. But anyway, today is supposed to be a broadcast, a Wise Thursday, with Brother Davis. Brother Davis be having different phone numbers, and I don't know all the time if he's on the board or not. So I don't know if he will be calling in to do a Wise Thursday, but let me just state this. No matter what, the program will go on. All right, there's plenty in the news for us to talk about. We could just focus on what's in the news. I actually just, prior to starting Tando, had just published a video saying that we should be taking more children away from parents. All right, and obviously those who know me, there's a caveat to that. But I think if you want to break the cycle of racism, you need to separate these abused children, and that's what I'm going to call them. I'm going to call them abused children from their racist parents, because their racist parents are teaching them racism. And to me, that's psychological abuse. You're going to cause that child to get killed or to kill somebody, to get mistreated or to mistreat somebody, and, you know, possibly turn into a terrorist. All right, so that's child abuse. And so without recapping the video, I mean, if Brother Davis doesn't show up, we could talk about that. You know, should we, like Becky likes to call the police for black people barbecuing, should we start reporting these racist children who are a product of their parents, reporting them to DSS, the Department of Social Service? Should we? I think we should. And so we can talk about that if we're not going to have a Wise Thursday or anything else that any of you, the listeners, want to talk about. We'll just turn it into an open forum. But before we get started with what's in the news, as Dave did post some news stories and Ross has posted news stories, and Ross will be going over what's in the news with us. But before we get started, please continue to support Black Talk Media Project. We are a North Carolina-based nonprofit media organization. You know, we do a lot. We don't just do Black Talk Radio Network. We just don't manage that platform, but we actually have classes every Saturday teaching people what technology to use, how to use the technology if they want to get into new media production. So, you know, we facilitate that and some other things. And if you would like to see this work not only continue but expand, please consider making a donation to the Black Talk Media Project. You could go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. At the very, very bottom, you'll see like a heart. It says donate, and you can click on that button, make a PayPal donation, or you can send a check or money order to made out to Black Talk Media Project, because we are a registered nonprofit. We're a real organization. Okay, it is not just some name I made up. Actually been registered for 9 years as a nonprofit. But it's Black, make the check or money order out to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina 28120. Again, that is Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina 28120. 28120. Yeah, I said it correctly. You can also join BTRCommunity.com, which is a social media platform, a safe digital space that was set up by black people for black people. Not saying that we exclude anyone else, because by law, Black Talk Media Project is prohibited from discrimination. But that doesn't mean that you can come in and say whatever you want, however you want, and antagonize black people, because no, that's not going to work. That's not going to fly. It's a safe digital space called Black Talk Radio Community, or BTRCommunity.com. So that B stand for black. So let's not get it confused. All right. Also, If you're interested in obtaining precious metals, Dave always tells you, get in contact with him. He has a contact form on his profile on blacktalkradionetwork.com for Tando Radio Show. I believe it's prosperitymint.com. But before you make a purchase of those precious metals, please get in touch with Dave first. All right, without further delay, let's get into what's in the news. Let's see if Ross is ready to go. Brother Ross, are you there?
Yes, I am. Peace. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing the best I can.
I understand. I'm with you on that one for sure. I do have it up. I was having some internet issues, but you gave me just enough time to get it fixed, so I'm good to go.
All right. So if you want to jump on some of those stories and, pause for a little bit between the stories if we want to add some extra commentary, but go right ahead, Ross.
All right. Thank you. The first article that they've posted is from SACBE.com, and that's SACBEE.com. It's entitled, Police Say No Deal on California Bill to Restrict Their Use of Force. So it says law enforcement organizations are unlikely to compromise with advocates of a proposal this session to restrict the circumstances under which police officers could use deadly force. Their staunch opposition significantly diminishes prospects for Assembly Bill 931, which would increase the state standard for lethal use of force from quote-unquote reasonable to quote-unquote necessary to become law. Now, I did see something about this a couple of days ago, and it seemed like a useful bill in regards to just all of the wanton killings of black people across the country, and I didn't even know that the police had a say in it. So this is just...
All right, let me ask you this. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Now, I haven't seen the article or read the bill. This is my first time hearing of it, and... Mm-hmm. So when you first heard about it, did it seem like something constructive or just some window dressing to you?
It seemed like it could have been constructive. Let me see. I just want to see if I could pull up something within the article real quick, just so people can get a little more context. Where is it? Okay. So it says, In this section of the article, it says a pair of U.S. Supreme Court cases 3 decades ago created a legal precedent that police can kill suspects if a quote-unquote reasonable officer in similar circumstances would have acted the same way. AB 931, which was introduced this spring following the shooting death of Stephon Clark in South Sacramento, would limit that justification to situations where officers have no available alternatives to protect themselves or others. So in that way, I think it's constructive because it's basically... It would have forced the officers to go through non-lethal means of dealing with the situation, and only as a final resort, where there was no other alternative, would they be legally allowed to use deadly force.
Okay, now, two things, and I heard these on Black Talk Radio Network. Yesterday, Tanya Free and Friends did a program, and they did a segment on a shooting that happened there in Richmond, Virginia. That's where they are based at, in Richmond. They broadcast out of that state. So this black person who had, I don't know the details. I don't know if it was a toxicology report done, but this person was found naked running through traffic, and the police tried to detain him. I mean, the guy, from the way Tanya and them was describing it, looking at the video, he ran into a truck. And, you know, if he hadn't have been under some kind of influence or something, a normal person wouldn't have got up from that. Okay, so he was hit by a truck. And I may be mistaken, but judging from the voices of the officers involved, the person who shot him may have been a black officer. Now, this is what I heard, though. The officer first pulled out the taser because this guy was like, again, I'm going off of somebody else's description, you know, mm-hmm. not acting normal, you know, squirming around and all of that. So the police officer first tried to use a taser on him, and the taser was having no effect. Then the guy, again, I'm going off of how they described the video, tried to get at the officer, who then drew his service weapon and ended up shooting him in the stomach. Now, you know, one of the commenters said that, well, he shouldn't have, you don't have to lethally shoot people. He should have shot them in the leg or something like that. And but then they start making some valid points about, now put yourself in that situation. Let's just take the police out of it. Let's just say that was me trying to help somebody, okay? And, you know, then this other person is naked and obviously going through some kind of traumatic experience mentally, psychologically, or whatever. And this person acted in a threatening manner towards me. I'm going to defend myself. You're going to have to make, I do get, you do have to sometimes make a split second decision. And then also, you can try to shoot somebody in the leg, and even shoot them in the leg. If you hit a major artery, you're going to kill them, but it's preferable to shoot them in the leg. How do I know he wasn't trying to shoot them in the leg? It's just, if we're going to discuss this honestly, I think we have to look at it from all perspectives. So in that case, from what I gather, from what they were saying, he did resort to non-lethal force. Now, contrast that with the 17-year-old in a suburb of Philadelphia who was riding in a car that was stopped by in traffic. We talked about this on New Abolitionist Radio last night, which I'm actually was going to bring up in a different context. But I saw the video. I actually published the video. I haven't had a chance to make my own video describing what I saw, but this is what I saw. All right. I saw a young boy who turned out to be 17 years old. You tell he was a boy, but he could have been a skinny man. I don't know. Anyway, but it was a 17-year-old boy. Now, he's in a car with two other individuals. It's one police officer. The police officer is putting the handcuffs on the driver. The other two people that was in the car decided that they was going to run for whatever reason. I ain't inside their head, and so I'm not going to speculate on that. But I do know they didn't run towards the officer like they was going to try to stop him or anything. They were trying to get away to prevent themselves from being arrested. So this kid took about three steps running away from the officer. The officer drew his weapon and shot him in the back. That's murder. You ain't try to tase him. You didn't try. And then I read that they have a Bill of Rights, you know, for that state, for officers and what have you. And it talks about they can use deadly force when a person's fleeing a felony. So that's what they'll try to say, because what caused them to stop the car was it was suspected of being in a drive-by shooting, which I suspect they had the wrong car because they later let the driver go. So you didn't witness, you weren't there to witness the drive-by shooting to make sure you had the right people. So to me, that doesn't even apply there. You know, a felony was committed, but not by them. You had no way of knowing if they were the people who did it, and you took this young man's life. Let me rephrase my language. You took this young boy's life, okay? You murdered him, in my opinion. Now, that also brings me to, Ross, too, and I know I'm putting a lot out there, to the young lady, Dolores, I forget her last name, from Black Lives Matter Asheville, that was on New Abolitionist Radio last night. She called in and she said that they were just successful not only in getting one of their people elected as the sheriff, but also got a policy put in place by the city council of Asheville that before a police officer can search your car, he has to first obtain not your verbal permission, but your written permission. So I'm saying there are some things we could do legislatively to lessen, let's say, the negative outcomes of these interactions with slave catchers and what have you. So, yeah, I just wanted to make those notations. So you say it could be constructive, but the police is trying to shoot it down. Now, my thing to that is, look, I wouldn't even be inviting them to the damn table. They the servants. Exactly. They the servants, okay? Now, we know in reality they slave catchers, but the way government is set up, they're described as public servants. We, the taxpayers, pay their paycheck. So it's not going to be no, you going to tell me what you want to do. I'm going to tell you what you're going to do, like the sister was talking about on New Abolitionist Radio last night. We are supposed to have command and control of the police. Ross, I toss it back to you.
No problem. I think is absolutely correct. And I did hear the sister Dolores, too, and I thought that that was quite a brilliant piece of legislation that her and her folks were able to facilitate as far as Black Lives Matter Asheville. And I agree with you. The police should have no say in the matter, because if they are technically, according to the government, public servants, they should be doing what the public requests they do, especially in a situation where there's this epidemic, you know, mass murdering of Black people across the country, whether it's men, women, or children. We're just getting shot constantly. So I agree with you emphatically. And you know, I just thought it was quite disingenuous that they would even allow the police any say-so in it in the first place, like you were saying. So it was almost like dangling that proverbial carrot in front of the horse or donkey kind of thing. So we'll see how this plays out. But, you know, the fact that they even allowed the police any say-so to me was the non-constructive aspect of
what
they were
trying to
facilitate.
Now, Ross, I do understand the strategy there. Because in reality, police unions have a lot of power. And these legislatures tend to always side with the popo in what they what they want and whatnot to get their endorsements as a police union or what have. So I get the strategy of perhaps getting them to the table so we can get a bill that they would endorse and then pass. But I still, at the end of the day, know we need to establish who's in command and in control. And the community should always be in command and control of the public servants that was hired to serve that community. So since when do servants get to dictate to the boss what they gonna do? When does the employee dictate to the business owner what they gonna do? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do want to open up the phone lines for anybody. I forgot to give out the telephone number, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056. Hit star to unmute yourself. Just watch your background noise, please. And you can jump in at any time. Just let's try to be concise so that we can keep it moving. But again, you know, it may turn out we're doing an open forum, and that's cool. All right, Ross.
Okay, thank you very much. The next article is from Sputnik News, and it's entitled "Chinese Companies Could Take Their Money Out of U.S. Market," says the analyst. And it says, worried by growing U.S. protectionism and the ongoing trade war with Beijing, Chinese companies working in the U.S. are now looking to invest their money elsewhere, acknowledging China's concerns about the possible impact of the ongoing trade spat with Washington. Moscow-based economic expert Alexander Solitsky believes that some of the money they are taking out of the U.S. could be explained by the improving economic situation in China. So this kind of ties into some of the stuff Dave has been talking about for a very long time. I know that China is also holding on to continuing almost as their trump card to hold on to U.S. debt, and they're continuing to gather that debt. But at the same time, it looks like they're pulling their money out of the U.S. market. So, man, it seems like the beef is just simmering right now. And it's just getting a lot more intricate as far as the games that they're playing, politically speaking. And like Dave says, I believe it's going to definitely escalate to a shooting situation and worse than that as this goes, because Trump is not pulling back on his sanctions that he just seems to be running roughshod with giving people sanctions for any old thing. I don't know what you wanted to contribute to that, but I definitely see China's not playing. They're really making some moves that are very interesting at this point.
Yeah, I would just recommend, and I'm sorry I got the podcast posted. I didn't get it posted till this afternoon, but the Tando Radio Show broadcast from yesterday, I think, really went in depth on some of this stuff that ties into that article you just read. So I'll just point people to yesterday's broadcast, which is now a podcast of Tando Radio Show. Just real quick from the chat room, I think Otis was talking about that other story about, you know, the citizens and the police and this particular bill. It was a citizens' movement, then the police union stepped up resistance, is what he said. So they kind of like barged their way into it.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Now that sounds like the slave catcher.
Yeah, it do, don't it?
Organized slave catcher situation there. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, and the state trooper in Virginia that shot the black person in Virginia, it was a black state trooper, Otis said. Otis lives in that area as well.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Very, very telling, to say the least. And I wanted to get into something that Otis posted too, but I'll wait till we get through these articles first, because I thought what he had posted and what he said was quite interesting. It's about North Korea too. So I'm going to get into the next one. The next one's from Press TV, and it says that Israel may up the intensity of airstrikes on Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that the Tel Aviv regime may increase the quote-unquote intensity of its airstrikes on Gaza. Quote, we are prepared for any scenario and our enemies would do well to understand this, unquote, he said during a military ceremony on Wednesday. And you know that they're pretty much a mini version of the United States as far as their terroristic behavior. So this is not surprising. They're continuing with Syria too. So it seems like Israel is spreading itself quite wide and far in regards to all of its military campaigns, just like the U.S. is doing the same. So they both seem to be two peas in a pod as far as just sending their killers into different theaters of war to kill people, and mostly innocent people. So this is just saying they're going to continue to do what they do, and I can see this just getting worse.
I don't even count the IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Forces, or their army or whatnot. I mean, I don't separate them from the United States. I mean, damn, they get U.S. taxpayer money more than any nation on the earth. They're like a dependent child of the United States. And in the United States, where do the Israelis get all their military weapons from and their ammunition from? They ain't buying it from Russia. They ain't buying it from China. It's being gifted to them, basically. I mean, because if I give you $1 billion, right, and this is beyond that, you know, any kind of so-called economic aid, but if I give you $1 billion and then you turn around and you come to a U.S.-based company and buy some planes and some tanks and whatever, did you pay for it or did I just pay for it? So anything that Israel is doing by extension, the United States is responsible for, in my opinion. They are dependent stepchild, you know. And so, I mean, what they're doing is just atrocious. And we heard Donald Trump withdraw from the UN Human Rights Committee. Not that it's going to make any kind of difference, because when has the UN ever enforced human rights for the people that the United States is violating? Yeah, they'll chirp on the sidelines and say this, that, and the other, but there's no action behind them words. So you might as well, I'm not going to say keep the words, because they do have propaganda value in that, hey, it ain't just the victims that's saying this. This is other white supremacists or other nations that's saying the United States is doing this. So, you know, Israel, man, I just tell you, man, that country has been described to me by Israeli activists. I've interviewed him. He's been on the Cows before, David Sheen. He says, if you want to know what Israel, inside Israel's like, just picture the United States during Jim Crow. That's what Israel's like.
That makes sense, because I've always said that the United States was Israel before Israel became Israel. Because if you look at how both of those states started, it was basically identical. Go into a country, kill off as many of the, you know, original people there as possible, take their land, and then, of course, subjugate everybody. So, I mean, you know, the United States set the precedent and the planning trajectory for what became the state of Israel as far as their behavior. So, and like you said, they do, you know, they're like that stepchild. So everything they do is an extension of U.S. policy, an extension of U.S. weaponry, and an extension of U.S. hegemony, because that's why they're there. They want, you know, the U.S. wants hegemony and control over those Arab nations, especially the oil-producing and opium-producing nations. So what better to do than have a satellite, you know, mini U.S. nation sitting amongst them that you equip with the best weapons possible to defend itself and do what exactly what Israel is doing. So I agree with you quite emphatically on that one for sure. And it's going to be interesting to see how this situation develops in that area with all of these things, because I really think that Israel is going to spread itself thin, just like the U.S. has with all, like I said, with all of these different proxy wars that they're fighting in all of these different countries and different theaters of war. So
what I think could happen, Ross, and I have no evidence to show that it might happen based on the past, these Arab countries have been more than willing to allow, you know, their fellow Muslims, and, you know, not every Palestinian is an Arab or a Muslim, but, you know, it's usually the Arab countries that have taken Israel to task in the past. Matter of fact, you know, that's what the 1967 war, the Six-Day War, right, was about. It was about Israelis killing these people that they bombing now to displace them, or their parents or grandparents, taking their land from them, just like the Native Americans' land was taken, or any of the other people throughout the world that have been colonized. And so, but what I think could happen is that these Muslim countries might say, you know, enough is enough, man. We just been sitting on the sidelines letting y'all murder these people and what have you. And, you know, it's time that we have some self-respect, and we're gonna have to go start another war with you. Could happen, but not likely.
Yep, I agree. And if you see even the situation with Saudi Arabia, they're facilitating their nuclear arsenal, and they're at this point facilitating the complete domination of Qatar. And of course, they're the another Arab U.S. proxy as well. So yeah, I agree with you. It could happen, but I don't think it's likely to happen just with the way the situation has developed to this point. If it was to happen, that would be an interesting thing to see unfold too, because it's just going to ratchet up, you know, a lot more of the violence between all of those different countries. And as that area destabilizes, without question, it's going to spread into the African continent, as far as just the, you know, via Egypt and the north and northeastern African countries. So it's going to be, you know, quite interesting to watch this unfold. But I agree with you. It is possible, but I don't think it's likely as well, for a lot of the reasons that you elucidated. So we're definitely in agreement on that. I'm going to jump to the next one. This one's from The Independent. I find this quite interesting. It reminds me of a Trump move, like Putin's learning from him. So this is from The Independent, theindependent.co.uk. 2/5 of Russian men may not live to see their retirement. Russians are accusing their government of raising the retirement age close to men's current average life expectancy, while the country is distracted by its hosting of the World Cup. Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev announced Thursday the Russian state pension age would be hiked from 60 to 65 for men by 2028 and from 55 to 63 for women by 2034. So I find that to be a very Trump-esque move. While everyone's watching soccer and having a good old time, and I don't know if you saw the article I posted about the earthquake that was created in Mexico just from one of their teams getting the gold, like the people jumped and stomped so much in unison that it literally registered on the Richter scale. So I'm assuming that while the Russians are doing the same thing, they're doing what we do here, distract the populace and put these laws into place that are completely oppressive for the people, hoping that they're not paying attention, which is, you know, it goes back to the Roman Colosseum. It's all Rome, the redux of Roman behavior all the way till right now. And basically, they don't want those people to get their retirement. So if they know that they're dying at a particular age, why not set it to the age where you figure, hey, you're going to croak anyway, so that money will just stay in our coffers, you know? So
yeah, they're making a U.S. move, because the U.S. mm-hmm. has raised this retirement age. And if I'm not mistaken, apparently the Russians' retirement age wasn't as high as the United States, so it just moves it closer. But here is something else
I was the 70, right?
Yeah.
Now, the retirement age is 70? Yep. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted to...
Now, here's another thing, and I want to bring it back to the United States and the Social Security, because I just had this random thought yesterday as I was watching people debate, you know, about immigration and whether or not the immigrants are stealing resources from Americans and this, that, and the other. And so then this lady said, and it is true, it's not that, you know, she was revealing new information, but I had a new thought behind it. But she said that, you know, the ones who do get a job or given a job correctly, because they ain't taking nothing, as Mr. Fuller has said. It's the business owners who are giving them the jobs. But they are still, and I read about the largest bust in history of ICE, and they're using many stolen identities of Americans, and they're paying into Social Security fund and what have you. So I was thinking, though, we keep hearing about these shortfalls. You know, I haven't heard anybody talk about it lately, but over the decades, kept saying, you know, the Social Security is running out. You know, we're not going to be able to pay everybody that's enrolled in the system, even though they've been paying all their lives. And of course, that has to do with stealing money, the misappropriation of that fund. But I was thinking, we should have a surplus if we got all of these undocumented immigrants paying into it and they can't never take it out. So something ain't making sense to me. How are we running a shortfall if we got all these undocumented people who can't draw Social Security paying into it? So we should
Well, remember you talked about this, or I think might have been on Dave himself, talked about the quote-unquote loss of like 20, I think it was $25 trillion recently.
I think that was like the Pentagon.
The money just disappeared. I think that the Social Security money is possibly part of that. Remember the Pentagon, I think it was, had lost quite a few $1 trillion that's completely unaccounted for. No one's being held responsible for it. No one's being brought to task to show where this money went. I think, hey, like you said, there should be a surplus. So if there is no surplus with all of these so-called illegal immigrants, like you said, I agree with you, they should be called refugees because they're leaving war-torn regions and dangerous situations. But if these people have been putting in all of this money, and then the U.S. citizens have been putting in all this money, and all of a sudden, because I just posted an article a few days ago about that whole thing where the Social Security is going to disappear and all of this stuff. So to me, all of this money that's been lost, because it seems like every year and sometimes a couple times a year, we'll hear that trillions of dollars have just up and disappeared. So that surplus, I think, is part of that missing money, as well as whatever underhanded machinations, you know, the CIA is in as far as drugs and gun trades and all of this stuff that they're doing clandestinely in order to facilitate their coups and other things they're doing in other countries. So I think that might be a hefty portion of these missing trillions of dollars that we keep hearing about every so often. What do you think about that?
I remember when Cynthia McKinney was in Congress. This might have been in 2007, might have been her last year, or 2008. But I remember when she was in Congress, you know, a decade ago, basically.
Yeah.
No, not a decade, almost a decade ago. And she said that the Pentagon, they did an audit of the Pentagon and $1 trillion was missing. So, I mean, like you said, it's never accounted for. You know, nobody's ever brought up on embezzlement charges, but hey, this money ain't just disappearing. You know, I don't even like using that term. How does it disappear? No, somebody's taking it. It doesn't vanish in the thin air. Somebody took it. Somebody did some transfers. And so I think that a forensic investigation by the IRS could possibly reveal where this money's going. But again, when you have corrupt people running the government, they're not going to facilitate something like that. They won't even allow the Federal Reserve to be audited. So that's what I think.
Because that's just the legal precedent has been set for situations like that. Even with their RICO, the way they deal with RICO and other things, they follow the money. And once you follow the money, all the truth is revealed at that point. And they don't want the truth to be revealed because of all of the things that they've stolen that money to accomplish. That's what I wonder is, what have they spent what they stole on? Where did that money go? And I wouldn't be surprised if Israel got a hefty piece of that too. You know, the the wayward stepchild that does whatever the U.S. says. So, yeah, this is very interesting. So I'm going to jump to this next one. This one's from The Guardian, and it's entitled, "No Sign of North Korea Dismantling Nuclear Weapons Program," Mattis admits. The U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis has said he is unaware of any steps taken by North Korea towards dismantling its nuclear weapons program since the Singapore summit and does not expect any in the immediate future. Mattis was speaking to reporters amid confusion over the diplomatic follow-up to last week's summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Now, I said this a while ago, but I believe if they do dismantle their nuclear weapons, that Kim Jong-un is going to have to look for a coup attempt. Now, the only way I think the coup attempt might not be facilitated is if he gets so close to China, which we've been seeing him do, that China just says, hey, we'll provide protection like they're doing with Syria and other places. So if he can do that, and let's say, because we don't know if he's going to dismantle, he might just, you know, flip Trump the bird and this thing escalates to another level. But if he does dismantle, I think that would be his only out to protecting his life, pretty much, because the U.S. is, I believe, is going to send somebody in there to try and take him out if he does dismantle them, because I think that's the only thing keeping him from doing it now is the fact that they know that they're holding our nuclear weapons.
I know that
they're capable. So I don't know, you know, what was your assessment on that?
Just yesterday, I was reading about one of them State Department employees, I don't recall his name, went to North Korea and then joked while he was over there about killing Kim Jong-un.
There we go.
And I was like, wow. But again, you know, I had interviewed this professor. I forgot what she covered, but she covered a lot of media and what have you. Remember that movie came out about assassinating? It was a comedy, and it was about assassinating.
It was like a claymation movie?
No. Well, I don't think it was a claymation movie.
Was it Team America?
No. It was a different one.
That was in it?
Yeah, I remember that one. But no, this one had a couple of actors in it. I can't remember the name of it, but they were supposed to like be going over there to make a movie that was their cover for the CIA.
Yeah, James Franco was in it, and I remember there was a big hoopla about that. I know what you're talking about. The other one that I talked about was the Team America claymation movie. Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening now.
Yeah, I saw both of those. So that's, you know, what your comments made me think about. But then again, though, from earlier reports, North Korea has already dismantled one of its testing sites. Mm-hmm. I just Googled that and pulled it up that they said they dismantled one of the testing sites. And this would, as one of the headlines says in the article, North Korea says it's a process. It's a step-by-step process. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this ain't supposed to happen overnight. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, this is just deception, more deception from the people who master at deception and what have you. But, again, if I was North Korea, I mean, I would have to have some guarantees from China, some guarantees from Russia that, hey, if I go ahead and give up my nuclear weapons and what have you, dismantle my program, that if these people try to invade us, then you have to have our back like you did during the Korea War. You got to come back in. But again, you know, who is the United States to be dictating that they should take apart their nuclear program when the new United States has been upgrading is? Who makes them who makes them the judge, jury, and well, they make themselves that. But again, you know, I can't tell Kim Jong-un what to do. That's a very precarious situation to be in. I think he just wants out, period, you know?
I just think
he wants out, period, and wouldn't care if the two Koreas became one again and he wasn't in power. I think he just wants to, you know, check out some basketball games, go to some I do, man, because like Rodman described him as a big kid, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, those are my thoughts on that, man.
There was an article I posted a long time ago about Kim Jong-un's upbringing, and I believe, like, he's very much like you described, because that's kind of like how they described him in the article. I wish I could find it, because I lost all of my bookmarks on my phone like a month to 2 months ago, and that was one of them. But if I could dig up that article on BTR Community, because I know I did post it there, I'll see if I could up it, because I thought it was quite telling. And I think he was schooled in either Sweden or Switzerland, and they followed him, and he was into basketball and all kinds of stuff. So behind that cold, you know, very staunch militaresque personality, I believe there is like a big kid behind that. And I know that they're blaming him for killing his own brother or half brother. After he took the throne and all of this stuff. So this is, yeah, you're right. I want to see if I could dig up that article, because it was a really good article. And like I said, I lost all my bookmarks, and that one was one of them that was in there. So I'll see if I could dig it up, because it was very interesting.
Hey,
and it gave a nice history of him on a personal level. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Otis, I saw you unmuted yourself. Did you want to go ahead and share some? I saw that you have posted some stuff in the chat room about the Social Security. We can revisit that if you have something to add. Otis, what's going on with you today, brother? Okay, I guess he doesn't. All right, so this is what he posted in the chat room. He said, here's the SS. Okay, there's Otis. Go ahead, Otis. Yeah, greetings to you.
Y'all have moved on, but all I was going to put in was, on that Social Security thing, you brought up Cynthia McKinney. I actually talked with her one time on a broadcast back then. Because what Congress was doing is use sleight of hand, and it wasn't just Republicans. Democrats have done it too. When they pull money out of the Social Security, what they do, what they've been cheating at, is, you know, they take that money directly out of your paycheck, so that's cash. But when that's supposed to be deposited in the Social Security Trust Fund, rather than actually make cash deposits, they convert it to bonds, then use the cash, then post the cash. So it's a bookkeeping flip. You post the cash to receivables and put the bonds in the Social Security Trust Fund. So what's happened is, like, by 2010, after they kept doing that, it got so the surplus from Social Security wasn't paying for enough for the accounts against it. So basically what they're doing is what the Republicans want to do anyway. They want to raid the whole chest, because it's something like there's trillions of dollars in that fund. And the only way they can get to it is to make it go negative, which the Republicans are trying to do this year. But what gets me, before I let y'all move on, what really gets me is everybody controls the narrative by saying this is Trump. But I've been on all of these politicians, because I've been following this stuff, I guess, because I was an old kind of wonk when I was younger. And I'm older now. I got a little bit more time spending doing it. I've been on all these politicians because this is not Trump. If you actually look at what the Republicans were doing, remember when they were talking about repealing Obamacare and all this stuff? They actually, when they were the minority party, they did something like 200 or 300 times of trying to put these bills through and refining them and getting it down to it. And Grover Norquist made it plain in 2012. He said, we're not trying to elect a furious leader. All we need is somebody with enough digits to hold a pen and sign the Ryan agenda with cutting these entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, SNAP. He went right on down the list. So now that it's happening, everybody's talking about Trump, Trump, Trump. No, I'm for the Democratic Party for having so much hubris till they let somebody like Hillary Clinton stop Bernie, rig their own election. This got everything to do with both damn parties being crooked, man. So I'll leave it there.
I agree. And one of the things, though, that you made me think of, we know the Republicans for decades have been talking about privatizing Social Security. So that's a backdoor way to privatize it, by putting it into bonds. Now, my question would be, what bonds? Who holds these bonds? Are these municipal bonds? Are these bonds on the open market? That's like backdoor privatization, in my opinion.
Well, you know, another thing I'd like to bring up for y'all, move on. You know, as much research as y'all have done over the last 6 years at New Abolitionist Radio, I was so happy to find y'all, because you're doing the nucleus work, but we talk about it all the time. People don't understand just how far these tentacles go. Trump just finished coming out to the public, and this is what I hate about mass media. He just is coming out talking about he's going to find a way to keep these families together over an extended time. I don't know if you saw some of the posts I made, but as soon as he did it, I sent a message to Max, because we've been doing enough stuff that we've covered this stuff and it's been in the fringes. For one thing, they already had a lawsuit from 1980 that didn't get settled until like 1997 or something like that, called the Flores Agreement. in that agreement, they weren't supposed to be able to keep a parent with a child, especially if it was a woman, incarcerated for longer than 20 days. That was the limit.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Huh?
I'm aware of that, and I think it's disingenuous of how the media is trying to say, well, see, under Obama, he was letting them go like that was an Obama administration policy. No, those people sued in federal court. And the Obama administration had no choice but to abide by the court.
Let me give you what really gets me is you and I both know that ever since Trump came in, they went on and did the plans they originally were going to do and put these two big centers up in South Texas, in Dilley, Texas, and a couple of other places in South Texas, all around Houston, and there's a few more that they're putting up in Arizona because California wouldn't go along with it. And try to do one in New Mexico, and New Mexico wouldn't go along with it. But here's my point. He made this deal. Then he comes out and tell people, this is what got me. I listen to people when they come out with a scam. When he made that announcement, we're going to keep the families together indefinitely, that's what triggered me. So since he said that, I've been digging in. And, man, when you find out, they already have 7 or 8 different places that are already taking these children, and they spread them as far as New York City and doing empty warehouses, old Targets and stuff like that. So here's what I'm going to try to cut it real short. Here's what gets me. Well, we know that they've closed down all these retail places all over the country for the last 4 or 5 years. We've been keeping track of them, 800 to 1,000 of them at a time. Now, the rich white people are taking these empty buildings that are, 1,500, 20,000, 30,000, and getting paid by taxpayers' money through GEO and CoreCivic and an arm of General Dynamics to house the daggone refugees that they call immigrants and illegals.
You know, Otis, see.
In the world. So the private prisons industry is going to get something like a $3 billion boost this year alone.
You know, Otis, this is why it bothers me, not to a great degree. I try not to let anything other than slavery really get under my skin. But when I see certain websites and yes, I'm going to say conspiracy theory. When we be talking about conspiracy theories and this and that is going to happen. And I'm sitting here been paying attention for the past 6 years and telling you it's already happening. It ain't about to start happening. It's already happening. It's just that they always pick on the most vulnerable people first. Okay. And so this is what FEMA camps and all of that been getting ready for. Not to round up quote unquote Americans, but to round up these refugees and put them into there. So I'm like, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction. You heard that? So we don't need to make up stuff. Or we don't have to go off of floating a theory that we really don't have no solid evidence to back it up, because there's plenty of evidence that shows they are engaged in what you're talking about, but just not in the context of how you're talking about it. So that's my thoughts on that. But Ross, we're gonna take a station identification break. And come back and we'll get back into these stories. The telephone number, if you would like to chime in, is 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056. Hit ** on your telephone keypad and that'll unmute you. Please watch your background noise. We'll be right back after this short break.
Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Tando Radio Show. Scotty Reed sitting in for Dave from LA, and riding shotgun with me is Brother Ross as we go through some of these news stories. Ross, did you have any comments on what we were just discussing, or did you want to move on to the next piece.
Well, I just actually dug up an article discussing Kim Jong-un as a student in Switzerland, and it corroborated everything that you and I both said. So it says, just a little bit of it, it says, Kim Jong-un's former classmates struggle to reconcile their memories of the quote-unquote good friend who was obsessed with basketball with the North Korean dictator. According to friends he made while studying at a German-speaking public school near Bern, Switzerland, the head of the rogue state had a good sense of humor and an impressive collection of Nike trainers. And one of them said he was a good friend. This is Joao Michello, who now works as a chef at a restaurant in Bern. He told the Daily Beast, "We had a lot of fun together. He was a good guy. Lots of kids liked him. I don't know anything about his life today. All I know is the guy I knew in school." So, yeah, I think he's a big kid, and he's just forced to put this face, you know, this public face out because of, first, I think what he inherited from his dad as far as the reputation, and then, of course, just to be the type of leader that he's been called as far as a dictator. It took a major shift in behavior, I think, for him to go from this basketball-loving child to the person who is being propagated as a dictator now. So I just wanted to just toss that out there, just so, you know, because I remember when I posted that article, not this one, it was a different one, it was a little more comprehensive, and it said that I was kind of taken aback just based on, like I said, just the public media spectacle that surrounds who he is and his character.
And I will always say that, again, I tell people, you even supposed to fact check me. Don't listen to BTR News and think that you don't have to follow up on me. You know, I'm not going to lie to you on purpose, but I might get something wrong, and you might be the one to correct me with the correct information, but we should always try to verify. But knowing the history of U.S. propaganda, we should know that who they label as a dictator, then, you know, we got to take that with a grain of salt. What's their definition of a dictator? Because Donald Trump's acting like a dictator right now. You know, in terms of the U.S. government, it has always been a dictatorship towards non-white people, okay? So when I hear people talk about, like Dennis Rodman, schooled George Stephanopoulos one time. This was about 6 years ago. I saw Dennis Rodman on ABC News, and he had been over there to North Korea. And so George Stephanopoulos, who was an ABC News anchor formerly in the Clinton White House, see how government and the corporate media are interconnected and interrelated and what have you. And so he gonna say, hey, George, he gonna say, Dennis, North Korea got labor camps. Dennis said it all calmly, United States got labor camps.
Yeah.
So whenever they talking bad about another country, you need to measure that. You need to take that with a grain of salt, and because you don't know if you're getting accurate information, you have to consider the source. And then let's say you got a good source, and then compare that to what the United States is doing to its so-called own people.
Yep, you are absolutely right. And that's something that I try to do too, is just tell people, look at this country. You know, before you say something about someplace else, look at the country you live in. Because a lot of U.S. citizens, the average citizen, doesn't really pay attention to what the government does elsewhere. So a lot of U.S. citizens are just quite uneducated, and I don't think it's by accident with all the distractions that they put in front of us. So
but they should be educated, Ross, on what's going on right where they live. I ain't read nothing about North Korea police shooting 1,400 people in a year, or 1,100, I think is the average, 1,100 or 1,200 a year. I ain't heard nothing about North Korea having one quarter of the, 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. That, you know, so they should be well aware of what's being done right here.
I agree. You know, but I think a part of that is the race politics. So as long as the quote unquote white majority is backing white supremacist policies, they're going to purposely turn a blind eye to those things because it's not them. But we know that technically speaking, as far as the numbers, more of them are killed by police than us because there's more of them here in the first place. They just don't report about that on the level that they report the killings of black people. So, yeah.
Right, because they don't want to rile up the white peasants.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking about this, though, Ross. We're not going to get into the details, but in BTR community, the thing about a buffer class came up. And I was thinking about that today, and I was like, it's the white peasants that's always been the buffer class.
Yep.
Those are the ones that they brought over here as indentured servants, or the ones that was fleeing poverty from the potato famine in Ireland, or poverty in England, and it was the rich, wealthy Anglo-Saxon who used them as the buffer class between them and the African people, the people that was enslaved. So absolutely, it's incorrect to say a certain section of black people is being used as a buffer class. No, it's the white peasant who has always been used as the buffer class. If we talking about the United States now, I can't talk on the history of many of other countries because I don't study their history like I study this one. But that's all, Ross.
Could I chime in a sec?
Yes.
Oh, without question, Brother Otis.
Scotty, you nailed it on the head. I've been saying to people, I'm not sure the date, but I can remember when Roz was saying about the absolute numbers, white people get killed more. Yes, but when you also break, I knew back in the 70s, in the late 70s, when the last time I actually tried to compare the data, the reality is the white people that was getting killed had a reason to get killed, the largest majority. There were very few innocent white people getting killed. Mm-hmm. Most of them, you were tracking down manhunts and all kinds of stuff. I mean, right here in the state I live in, Virginia, was known for that. They usually did some horrific stuff to get killed, but not the kind of stuff where we've been seeing with black males primarily.
Well, I would say, and again, it's not that we trying to compare or there's some contest of who's the biggest victim, because who the hell wants that trophy? I don't, you know.
Exactly.
But I tell you, man, I have seen some videos of some white people getting killed, man. Do y'all remember that one where the dude was in the apartment building and the slave catcher made him crawl on his knees before shooting him down like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's what I mean. That's later. That's what I'm saying.
Since okay, I got you. In the 70s.
Yeah, the last 20 years, I've seen more unnecessary killings of white men. But before that, he really committed some crazy crimes.
Yeah, and you're talking about mobsters. You're talking about the mob and people
The militarization of police. Yeah. Since we did this 9/11 and training, and doing this training from Israeli IDF, that's when the police have really upped it for everybody, man.
You're right. And, you know, it's funny because they play the class and race game. So if you look at Donald Trump, you know, remember he said he didn't want anybody who was poor running the Treasury. Somebody rich running the Treasury was who he was looking for. So he's letting them know who's more important are the white people that are affluent, that have political clout and that kind of stuff. But yet the poor dirt road white people always have this ideology, well, at least I'm white. At least I'm not one of them.
Yeah, and he feeds them that racist rhetoric at these rallies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how they use them as a buffer class. But at least I'm not one of y'all. That's the mentality they have. Even though, like you both eloquently stated, they're getting it too. But that's their answer to the question: is this I'm not black. At least I'm white. And that's where them being used as the real buffer class in this country comes into play. So you are absolutely correct. That is so true. Did you have anything else to say on that before we move on to the next one?
No, I didn't. Thanks, Otis, for that input.
Thanks, Brother Otis. Absolutely. The next article is from Veterans Today, and it's entitled Syrian War Report, June 21st, 2018, Government Forces Pressure on ISIS Cells on Multiple Fronts. So it says, from South Front fighters of the Syrian Arab Army, SAA, and the Tiger Forces have liberated the villages of Musaika and al-Dalafa from militant groups in northeast Daraa. Thus, they de facto besieged the militant-held area of al-Lajat and cut off supply lines to it. According to pro-militant sources, at least 7 government fighters were killed. So as far as I know, it's the United States that's backing these ISIS cells. So it looks like the Syrians are making some headway in certain parts of the conflict that they're dealing with these ISIS fighters. So that is actually a good thing for Syria itself. But of course, we know that the casualties are going to be mostly innocent people, like we've been seeing in the news for months now.
Right, that's usually the case in all wars. From some recent articles I've been reading, is that the casualties are mostly civilians.
Absolutely. That's why Dave always says, you know, the war is against the average citizen. It's not like Donald Trump is putting on, you know, guns and a rucksack and going out to meet, you know, Kim Jong-un by himself. So, yeah, that's exactly correct. You know, it just, and it was Dave who talked about Kissinger's talking about the military being his dog. You know, he just sends them where he wants to send them, and they do what he tells them to do. And as long as they do that, then he's pretty much happy with the arrangement. So
yeah, because they are what's the word? Expendable buffer class. Expendable. That's that expendable buffer class, man.
And it's really, when you think about it from those terms, you really have to understand what buffer class means, because these are the buffer classes, the military who's representing white supremacy. You know, it's even the non-white people in the military are still representing white supremacy, because they're doing, you know, the white man, the white government's bidding. So these are the buffer classes that are actually documented. The average poor white citizen, the military-industrial complex, the police-industrial complex, all of these things. So, yeah, absolutely, you're absolutely right, and I'm glad that you brought that up just so we could get more clarity on what the buffer class actually looks like versus some of the stuff that we've been hearing. This next article is quite interesting. This is from Strategic Culture, and it's entitled Sexy Metal, the Missing Element in the Korean Puzzle. Arguably, the heart of the matter in the Trump administration's embrace of Kim Jong-un has everything to do with one of the largest deposits of rare earth elements in the world, located only 150 kilometers northwest of Pyongyang and potentially worth billions of U.S. dollars. And that was one of the things that Otis posted that I wanted to talk about, as it ties in directly with this article and the fact that, Donald Trump basically being extra friendly with Kim Jong-un and them hugging each other and patting each other on the back and all of that stuff has more to do with them accessing the rare earth mineral, because I talked about this many times within the last year and change about the fact that China has bought up every rare earth mineral site in the continental United States. And as of last summer, they got the last one. I remember I saw a documentary on PBS where they were discussing the rare earth minerals and the fact that China started accumulating these rare earth mineral sites in the U.S. over 20 years ago. And this was during a time the U.S. did not completely understand the importance of rare earth minerals and technology and in the theater of war. So, again, this ties into what Dave and I talked about before about Chinese people playing Go, which is based on the control of time and space, versus playing chess, where you're basically dealing with straight military strategy and combat to take space. So they were basically using the time and the time that they had 20 years ago to take control of these rare earth minerals, and now it's at a point where the U.S. has none, so they have to go to Africa like they've been. They have to play nice with Kim Jong-un as well. So I just wanted to toss that out there.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, no problem. I just thought it was just quite telling, especially because a lot of people didn't really understand that. And like I said, when I saw the documentary on PBS, I was just fascinated with that. And then as things started to come up even further down the road, especially once China had acquired the very, very last rare earth mineral site in the continental United States, then that just set the precedent for a lot of our country's machinations globally. And all you have to do is look at the countries that they've been intervening in. As far as the African continent, AFRICOM is all over the place, and they're going to these places for oil and rare earth minerals. I could be incorrect, but that's what I see happening. And with North Korea, it's the same thing. And I think recently they also found that Japan also has a sizable stash of rare earth minerals, if I remember correctly as well. Do you remember that? Like a few months back, I think we had discussed
vaguely remember it, but...
Yeah.
This is what I have to say about it, is that the United States ain't dictating no moves here. Moves, they are being dictated to the United States. They're reacting, that's what I should say. They are reacting to global.
Yeah, it's not preemptive.
Yeah, it's not preemptive. They're reacting. So they have no plans. They have no desire of peace on the Korean Peninsula. They have no real desire to stop that gravy train called the, man, what did we call it? Well, they change the operation name every year, but, you know, the Korean War Games between South Korea and U.S. forces and some other countries participate too, but all practicing like, you know, they're about to invade North Korea. The U.S. has no desire to stop any of that because, you know, it's people making money off of that. The military industrial complex, you know, makes money off of that. Transportation,
absolutely.
You know, because the United States military, look, I flew over to a war zone on a civilian airliner. It wasn't on no C-130. That's money. That's money being, you know, paid by the government to. So it's a lot of money. And like I was telling this, I suspect he was a Korean dude who was sounding kind of Trump-esque and wanting it. And I told him, I was like, you know what? I actually been there. And I know how much money y'all make off of all them U.S. soldiers that come in for that year. So I have no doubt that there are some brainwashed Koreans with no self-respect and that just simply want to see them go on because they're profiting from all the soldiers coming in country and visiting the brothels and the bars and buying the bootleg goods.
I agree. And I think I see someone from area code 251 that unmuted themselves.
Area code 251. Excuse me, area code 251. Thank you for calling in the Tando Radio Show. Scotty and Rod sitting in for Dave today. What's on your mind? Give us your name and what's your question or comment?
Peace, and thank you, Brother Scotty and Brother Rod. Appreciating the discussion thus far. I just wanted to reply quickly around this question of law enforcement officials and the like. Off of this book that I would just like to, you know, put out there for whomsoever would be interested. And it's called Slave Patrols by a Sally Haddon. And essentially it's just about the origins of these slave patrols and how they functioned primarily up until 1865, although, you know, it goes a little bit into the aftermath and the Klan, etc. But one point that I thought y'all might find intriguing, you know, around the question of, you know, propaganda and the language of it, there's a portion in which the author distinguishes between these different forms of societal white terror that was used to check the enslaved population, you know, distinguishing between the slave patrols and slave patrollers, the professional slave catchers, you know, just the private citizens who just wanted the rewards, overseers and constables. And I thought that was quite intriguing, you know, seeing the distinctions, but at the same time, how they all function together collectively. And so I would just offer up that based on my reading of that section, it would seem that these modern day enforcement officials are even more akin to the slave patrollers or paddy rollers than they would be the slave catchers, who were kind of a more specialized class of patroller, if you will, or a hunter of human beings. I just thought that was there's a number of other.
Let me see if I understand you, Tag. So you're saying, like, okay, we use today's vernacular, the slave catchers who would operate nationally, you know, are sort of like the U.S. Marshals as opposed to the local police. I got you.
I would say, yeah, exactly. Or these, you know, other types of so-called special forces and detectives and whatnot. You know, it was a more specialized version of the slave patrollers, which was kind of a more generalized, you know, position. that would change over time, the criteria for being a slave patroller or paddy roller.
I got a question for you, Tag. Have you been with us from the beginning?
Just about. I
okay.
Just missed the intro.
All right. Well, Tag, we brought up in the context of slavery, and we don't want to get into the details because we don't want what's been going on in BTR community spilling over to Tando and what have you, but we were talking about the question of the buffer class. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see any points that I'm making in terms of the white peasants of Europe being brought over here to be the buffer class between the slave and the slavers, or do you see it some other way?
I would say both. I would say both. I see it. I see exactly what you're saying with that, and it's an important point. And I would go as far as to say that, you know, buffer classes are very flexibly employed by these slavers and white supremacists, you know, and have been for centuries. I would say that that's a major component of their overall strategic racism, you know, which creates buffer classes to insulate themselves, you know, from the masses of people, regardless of coloration. So I absolutely, and it's one of the points of this author, who, you know, whose tone I totally tend to disagree with in the text, Slave Patrols. But this author, it seems like one of her kind of sub-narratives is to dispel this belief that these slave patrollers and slave catchers were all, you know, of the so-called, white trash, or of the lowest classes of whites, you know, which she reveals through her research that no, it was not exclusively the lowest classes or the peasants who were functioning as slave patrollers, and in fact they would employ, you know, melanated people, even, you know, not enslaved dark-skinned human beings and indigenous heads as slave catchers and whatnot. So it just seems like, you know, a critical part of their overall strategy of
right.
keeping themselves, you know, safe.
I hadn't even thought about that, but you're exactly correct. As I read up on Aboriginal history and the so-called five civilized tribes, but yeah, they were employed as slave catchers as well. Thanks, Tag.
Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
Thank you all. Definitely.
That brother's sharp. I love his input. Yeah, it's very, very true and very accurate as far as that. All of those different variants when it comes to the buffer class and insulation that the colonizers, the dominant colonizers, have placed between themselves and the masses of our
yeah,
people.
Yeah, and like Otis just posted in the chat room, that meritorious manumission, which I first started reading about, you know, after the American Civil War, not the Civil War, the Revolutionary War. And I'm sure it was going on before that, but what it was is, hey, here's a reward for any victim of slavery that does something that benefits the system of slavery. You'll get your quote-unquote freedom. It ain't going to be full freedom, and you're not going to get all the privileges and benefits that I have for myself, but hey, at least you won't be a slave.
Yep, and what they did was they codified it and legalized it. So a lot of people had no problem being that buffer, because just in the concept of Neely Fuller's VGQ, they're saying this is my best path to alleviating some of my stress. So I'm going to take this path, regardless of who it affects down the road. It doesn't matter, because at that moment it's about me, you know. So yeah, that's one of the ways that VGQ concept could be applied in a negative way. But it's also just an aspect of what some of our people have done historically to try and mitigate the terrorism that we go through, regardless of how we feel as far as who's on the right side of history and that stuff.
Right.
It's just a fact of the matter, you know. So, I think this discussion is quite important. And this is actually the last article we have. I posted this from Reuters. And it says, exclusive, Canada could make it harder for U.S. to win fighter bids. So it says, Canada is discussing changes to a multi-billion dollar fighter jet procurement process that could make it harder for U.S. companies to win the order as trade relations between the neighbors sour, two sources with direct knowledge of the discussion said. So this ties into what Dave was saying about both Canada and Mexico turning their backs on the United States. And now that the United States, as far as Trump dealing with these tariffs on steel and all of this type of stuff, well, Canada's retaliating, and this retaliation might, cripple some of the U.S.'s moves towards getting these multi-billion dollar fighter jets, which possibly can play out in a negative way in the theater of war, depending on what these jets are capable of. And then also, to me, the U.S. will have to really go outside of itself to procure a lot of these things because they don't own any rare earth mineral sites. So just to have a functional jet, you have to have those rare earth minerals. To have a functional tank, all of these different elements, the different scanning and surveillance and all of the drones, all of that stuff needs rare earth minerals. So, like you said, I think that this is the worst, most reactionary situation the U.S. has been in, probably in its history. So, to me, all the signs are there that this country's in for a rude awakening down the road. We just don't know exactly when they're going to flip the switch. But when it comes, we're going to get hit quite hard. And I just thought that this was an important article because it just kind of shows how deep this goes and the fact that as much as America touts itself as this powerful nation, that a nation like Canada, who we wouldn't really think of in that way, has this ability to facilitate making it either harder or potentially stopping some of the U.S.'s moves as far as preparing for the theater of war.
I would agree with that. On a side note, but related to Canada, and I'm wondering how this is going to impact the United States as well as south of the border. Because a lot of the stuff, man, is interconnected. So, like I've stated, that most of these people that's coming here are fleeing violence from these drug cartels, and it's just open warfare in the streets, like we have seen, especially during the 90s in this country, all facilitated by drug war prohibition policies and what have you. So, Canada has become only the second country in the world to legalize cannabis.
Yes, completely. Uruguay is the first, right?
Yes, Uruguay was the first. And so Canada has completely legalized it. That means recreational use and everything. Now, it was just a few years ago when Barack Obama was still in office, and he was at one of those conferences it was North American, Central American, South American. I can't remember the name of the conference, but they always meet up. I think this last time they was trying to convince them to kick Venezuela out, but I think they lost the vote. But these countries were saying, look, the majority of the profits of the drug cartels is from cannabis. And if we legalize cannabis, we can not only tamp down on the violence, but we could create jobs for our people. Okay. Mm-hmm. To me, that would solve your quote unquote refugee problem right there. That would solve it right there. So I'm wondering if Mexico or Guatemala or Honduras or any of those South American countries that wanted to legalize and Obama told them, no, if y'all want to keep getting this U.S. Gov aid, then you'll keep the drug war in place. Now, I'm wondering, with Canada making this move, if these people might get some balls and determine their own, self-determination and how they want to run their nation and how they want to regulate cannabis or not.
Now, the interesting part about the cannabis discussion is that a couple of weeks ago, I posted an article that was dealing with the fact that in California, the way that, because they seem to have the most complex system as far as legalization, because I think they've legalized it. They're one of the longest, the states that have had it legalized the longest.
No, that would be Colorado.
Right, yeah. But isn't California close to them? I know Colorado's probably the oldest, but they've had it quite for a while.
But California only had medicinal.
Got it. Okay. Because what I was finding was that in the article, it was saying that even though California has legalized it for medicinal purposes, that people are still being forced to go to the streets to get their cannabis because they tax it so bad that they can't afford it.
I read that article. Yeah, I read that.
Like you're gonna tell me, okay, if I need it for cancer, let's say, or something, I have legal access to it, but then you ratchet up the price because you're taxing me out the backside.
Right, right.
And then, you know, I can't afford it, even though it's legal for me to possess, and it's something that I need in order to survive. So now I got to go back to the cartel or the people who get their supply from the cartel because they're the ones who make it affordable. So that's another issue that we have to look at. Because now, all of these states, I know Jersey... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I used to be in conversations with law enforcement against prohibition, which is former cops, former judges, people like that. That's, you know, now in this organization trying to get all drugs legalized, regulated, and taxed. But, you know, it that's on California's government. Like you said, they levied this tax to make it more expensive than what it would cost on the street. But from what I've heard over the years is that legalization will actually make it cheaper. It should make it cheaper. Now, Colorado actually has some pretty reasonable prices and what have you, but they have totally legalized it, not just medicinal, but recreational as well. And they do tax it, but they're not putting that big of a tax on it. But they're still reaping billions in taxes that they are able to fund their schools and whatnot. So that's like, you're right to be concerned about that. That's going to depend on the state regulation, how the state regulates it. And then let's say, for example, I've been reading that there's a bill working its way through Congress to legalize it here in the United States, and Trump has said he may sign it. But again, will the federal government then levy a bunch of taxes on it to where, again, the street market survives? So it's a good question, Ross.
You know, because, you know, basically, even when they legalize it, they're going to find a way to rob you. That's the thing with this government. It's such a criminal, it's a continuing criminal enterprise. That's pretty much what the United States.
But the thing is, though, here's the thing, though. In most of those states that have legalized it, you are allowed to grow your own. So whenever I hear people talking about, oh, the government gonna do something to it, well, it's not the government that's actually growing it, okay? It would be it'd be private businesses. You know, we got that sister up there in Alaska, Charlene Green or something like that. You know, she quit her reporting job on the air and started
I think Gus interviewed her on the couch.
Yeah, and started her business and what have you. So, you know, it's just going to depend, man, how they roll it out and how they tax it. But if you can grow your own, you know, that would be the best route to go. Then you ain't got to worry about where it came from or if anybody put anything in it, you know, because cannabis pretty much, that's why they call it a weed. It'll pretty much grow anywhere.
Yes, it will. And it reminds me because the governor of my state, Phil Murphy, the governor of Jersey, he is a staunch legalization advocate, and he's trying to push the legislation through as fast as possible. From what I understand, he was getting pushback from certain politicians throughout the state, but he's like not playing. He's trying to move forward, and from what he's been saying, he's trying to see it legalized completely by
2019. Well, they actually already legalized it, if I'm not mistaken. It was Charlie Crist who prevented it from being implemented, okay, because it was a voter's initiative that legalized. Now, I can't remember if it was just medicinally or what, but Charlie Crist refused to allocate funding to implement the system. But it's been legal in New Jersey, but they just never implemented it. And they're still making arrests.
Well, I know Chris Christie had made it really, really hard for people because they did legalize it medicinally. I know that. But Chris Christie made the law so strict that people were begging for relief as far as people who had, you know, family members with epilepsy or severe illnesses.
Right, right.
That, let's say CBD would help. He made it so hard that actually as soon as Phil Murphy got in office, the first thing he did was ease the restrictions so that these people wouldn't suffer. And then he's like, I'm trying to legalize it by 2019. I know he discussed the fact that he wanted to allow people to grow a certain number of plants, for themselves so that they can have their own rather than having to go out and buy it. So all of those different aspects of
Callers, watch your background noise.
Looking at. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we got some callers on the line. We're getting ready to come to you, Brother Jenna. Give us just a second. We're going to take our last break. We do got to get out of here before the top of the hour. Blacks in Business Radio will be on air tonight at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. But listen, we're going to take this break, and then when we come back, we're going to go hit the phone lines again. If you have a question or comment in this last half of the show, you can give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit **. Please watch your background noise. We'll be right back.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
And welcome back to Tando Radio Show. Scotty Reed sitting in on this broadcast for Brother Dave. He won't be with us tomorrow, but I guess, you know, we can do a BTR news tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. Do it just like we've done today, you know, keep it flowing or whatnot, unless I schedule a guest. I'm not sure on that yet, but we do want to go to the phone lines. We got Jenna in queue that wants to comment. What's going on with you, brother, and what's on your mind?
Greetings. It's been a wonderful day. Greetings to all the callers and listeners. Shout out to you, Brother Rise, helping Brother Scott to do his thing today. I wanted to comment about the legalization. When that happened with the woman that you're talking about that quit her job, you know that they went behind her about a year later and made it to where she could not she couldn't participate in the marijuana game no more. So it's always some type of gimmick that's being placed to where we are being excluded. One of the other things is that when we get to this point to where it is legal, that will be more than likely on a state level. So we always have to pay attention to the federal laws, because with the federal laws being that it's still not legal, if you're on a job that drug tests, I see them putting a lot of emphasis on those randoms that we already have to deal with. I see them putting a lot of emphasis on that because of the people who will see that it is legal statewide, but they would not allow that to happen on your job. And yeah, I was talking about the buffer class. It was interesting considering everything that we done talked about this week, because we still have dirt poor white people that always reminds you that what they say goes, at least in their own mind, because they believe that they could go, they think that they're part of that white supremacy. Me, myself, I have my own ideas about that, and I figure that if you have to go get some help, I don't consider you a white supremacist. I know a lot of people may disagree with me on that end through you and still be safe, and you have to wait for the slave catchers to come. That doesn't fit my definition of a white supremacist or a racist. because you have to go, in order for you to be a racist in my particular, from my particular standpoint, I have to worry about what you will do to me at any point, at any time. But I'm not going to, I'm starting to go down a transit, so I'm going to mute myself and thank you for your time.
All right, let me say this. I agree with what Mr. Fuller says about his definition of what a white supremacist is. Now, like he said, the system of white supremacy is based on mistreatment. It's about mistreating people based on their skin color. That's what white supremacy is, and it runs as a system. It's built on mistreating non-white people, okay? Now, he also says that every white person isn't a white supremacist. Well, the makes a person a white supremacist is if they practice in white supremacy. All white people don't practice or believe in mistreating other people. So I find that a lot of people sometimes will quote Mr. Fuller and talk about white supremacy, but they don't adhere to the code or the definitions that he put forth. And I have my disagreements with some of the stuff he put forth, but there are some stuff that's just undeniable truth, not just because he said it, but because it's logical when you think about it. And then, you know, I find some of the things he said that Malcolm X just said it in a different way, or Martin Luther King said it in a different way. I'll just say this again. Let me just quote him directly. He says that all white people are not white supremacists, but you have to be white to be a white supremacist. So this little black preacher man down there that got his tongue stuck so far up Trump's behind, dog, you might be trying to get next to a white supremacist, but you'll never be a white supremacist. You'll be a buffer. That's what you will be. Okay. Now, on the thing about the cannabis, I looked that up. Charlo Green is her name.
Yep.
They did try. I pulled up an article from 2016. It says reporter who quit on air to fight for pot legalization faces decades in prison. So, you know, they went to stack charges on her, 8 counts, and she was looking at a total of 24 years in prison. She is facing 14 offenses for a possible 54 years. Now, I pulled up her name and then another Google search, and she's mentioned in a June 12, 2018 article. And I'm just pulling it up. So let's read it and see if she lost her freedom or if she's doing what she wanted to do, what she set out to do. In a push to get Alaska voters to legalize marijuana, supporters suggested a tax on growers of $800 a pound, though they knew it would be unworkable in the long run. That goes back to what we were just talking about. Damn pound cost about $800. Not that I'm an expert on it, but a pound cost about $800 on the street market. So they talking about doubling that with tax. So that goes back to what you were saying, Ross. The tax aimed to show that the industry was willing to pay its share, said Brandon Emmett, who was part of the successful 2014 legalization campaign. The hope was that once pot became legal, the industry regulators and lawmakers would work together to revamp the figure, he said. So far as I can tell, we gambled poorly because that's not happening, he said. And I think we're running headlong into a crash. Let me get to the part where it mentions her name. Let me see. Y'all bear with me. Why I look for that, Ross, did you have any comments on the tax part?
Yeah, I just think that the tax situation is just another racket, because when you look at Colorado, they said that they had such a surplus as far as funding that, they, like you said, they were able to utilize that to work on schools and education, things like that. And like we were just talking about the trillion plus or trillions of dollars that's just been up and disappearing, I think that all of these things tie in. And I think the greatest reason for them to legalize it is the fact that it's become so popular. I just saw an article that dealt with a survey, and they said like well over 65% of the United States actually are fine with pot being legalized. They're like, look, you know, it's better. I posted another article dealing with the fact, the difference between alcohol and cannabis, and the fact that cannabis is better, not just for the consumer, but for the community. So people know, and the cat's out the bag as far as the benefits of it, especially CBD, which is something I've recommended for people who have relatives with Alzheimer's and dementia. It definitely helps the brain to function in a better and higher capacity for those people. People who've been suffering with all kinds of pain, especially on a cellular level or pain that's ongoing, it works for that. It helps with so many things. Matter of fact, CBD was also found scientifically to shrink tumors, cancer tumors, automatically, not just in humans but in dogs. So they even have variants of CBD that you can give to your pet, and it can either protect them from getting cancer, or if they do have cancer, it can help get rid of it. And they actually took cancer cells, tumor cells that they had in a petri dish, and they took a drop of cannabis and CBD and put it on the cancer cells, and it killed them almost on contact. So there's so many different things that this plant can be used for, both industrially, and I would suggest people read a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Herrera, because it has the most, I would say, comprehensive historical data on marijuana, the different uses, the fact that at one point it was your civic duty as a U.S. citizen to grow cannabis or hemp so that they can use it, and that book is great. Matter of fact, on my profile on BTR Community, I have it pinned, where the same guy, Jack Herrera, his mother was an Alzheimer's sufferer, and he actually gave her joints to smoke, and he noticed that the Alzheimer's had literally, she had gone back to being normal. Her memory came back, her behavior was normal, everything. So he had actually rolled her like 60 joints and put them in two medicine bottles and told her, you know, you smoke two joints a day, and that was his regimen for her, and that in 2 months he would come back and replenish it for her. So her father, because they were very elderly, they were of the old school that, you know, weed is a gateway drug and it's dangerous, the Reefer Madness stuff. So his father came home not knowing the things that his son had done and dumped the joints that he rolled in the trash. And within 2 months, she died because the Alzheimer's came back with such a vengeance. It was like double worse than what it was before he gave her the cannabis. And yeah, he said he had his mother back for the first time since she got Alzheimer's by having her smoke cannabis. So this is something I've talked about because, you know, it actually works. So that's it. That's what I wanted to say with that, just to help folks who might
now
be dealing with some of these issues.
This is the last thing I found on Charlotte Green. They appear to be dragging her case out because they charged her in 2016. In 2018, she is very busy on podcasts and television shows, and, you know, she seemed to be enjoying her life. And I would have to say, though, with her notoriety, but again, you can never discount racism in the system, that right, hopefully if they try to take her to a jury trial, that it'll end up in a hung jury, or they will acquit her in what's known as jury nullification. So she isn't in prison right now, but those charges are still there. And I guess they're going to try to drag it out. It may end up getting dropped, though. You know what I'm saying? But who knows?
Now, what? I think that's probably the case, because I remember when she was on the Cows, at that time, she was discussing the case and the fact that they had added all these charges to her. And at the last time she was on the Cows, she said that she would come back with an update as things developed, because at that point she was kind of in like a legal limbo situation. So like you said, and you know that they're good for that, they'll drag out the case. Most of the time, people who have been following the case will forget and stop following the case because it's been out of the news for so long. And sometimes that's how they railroad people, because there's no attention.
But she's been keeping herself in the news, is what I'm saying, is a good thing.
Which is good.
Yeah, because there's a whole industry around that. I think Otis had a comment before we get ready to close it out. I got to make way for Blacks in Business Radio. Otis, did you have a final comment to share with us today, brother?
No, Scott, not really.
Oh, okay. I saw your line unmuted. My bad. Okay. So, Ross, I want to check. Go ahead, Otis. What was that?
I was just going to tell you, I'm going to post the link in the chat room if you can check later about Canada's problem with border crossing since they legalized.
Post it in BTR community. Don't post it in the chat because it'll get lost in the chat. All right, bro. Tag me in it. Make sure you tag me.
Okay.
All right, Otis. Thanks, man. Thanks to Jenna. Thanks to Tag, our abolitionist brother up there in NYC. And thank you, the listeners, for tuning in to Tando Radio Show today and hanging out with us for this nearly 2 hours. I want to give Ross the opportunity to give any final comments he'd like to give. Thank you again, Ross, for sitting in and hanging in with me. It made it a lot easier because I was not prepared to do a program.
No problem. I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity. I thought the discussion was great. I hope everything is okay with Dave because, you know, like you said, we didn't hear from him or anything. So I hope everything is positive and it's just business oriented, whatever he's dealing with. And just looking forward to BTR News tomorrow. And thanks to all the calls and listeners. And for those of you who do get something out of the BTR network, Black Talk Radio Network, please, donate and donate your financial energy. And also you can become a member of BTR Community, which is a closed and safe space, digital space for black people to get together and discuss issues pertinent to black people without worrying about having your data mined or your information sold to any bidders. This is a nonprofit organization so that you won't see any ads or commercials for Google or any crap on there. So just get on board, and that way we can, you know, continue to do great things and try and get the information that our people need out there. And peace to Tag, man, because that brother is on point. I really want to just give him a big, big, big up and shout out. And great program last night. And with that, I'll mute myself. Good brother.
All right. Thank you, Ross. And again, thank you all listeners. I'll be back on air with a live broadcast of BTR News tomorrow in this 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time slot. With that said, y'all have a blessed evening, peace, and good night.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.